when road quality improves, people are substituting away from low-wage jobs like informal employment and agriculture, and they're moving into manufacturing jobs or other formal employment opportunities. And this leads to larger wages and increased labor income.
Welcome to Vox Dev Talks. My name is Tim Phillips. I think of an image to represent spending on infrastructure. I'm guessing that many of you immediately pictured someone repairing a road. We naturally assume that maintaining highways will help developing economies to grow and the people that live in them to thrive, but there's surprisingly little hard evidence on what the return on this investment might be. But Alex Rothenberg of Syracuse University is one of the authors of a study that uses a new strategy to analyze the impact of mending the roads in Indonesia. And he joins me now. Alex, welcome to Vox Dev Talks.
Thanks for having me.
Road maintenance, it's one of those classic infrastructure policies, isn't it? And it's pretty expensive as well, we know that. But given that, why might we speculate that it would still be a good investment?
Adequate transport infrastructure is really essential for economic development and growth. By facilitating the movement of goods, services, and people across locations, road networks can increase regional trade, integrate good markets, stimulate output growth, and raise welfare. And when roads deteriorate, potholes can emerge, and this can slow down drivers and cause increased vehicle maintenance expenses, add fuel costs. In the worst case, bridges collapse and markets begin to kind of segment completely.
But given that, why do we not know more about the impact of road infrastructure and maintenance?
To take a step back, I actually think we have a really robust and well-developed literature on the effects of new transport infrastructure projects.
Absolutely.
So there's several studies of new national and provincial highway links, like the interstate highway system in the United States, China's national trunk roads, new railways in colonial India, or roads connecting new capital cities in Brazil. Mm. We also have some good evidence on the impact of rural road improvements, particularly from a national rural road construction program in India. But we have less evidence on the benefits of road maintenance. So, you know, once we build these new projects, we know less about what happens when road authorities decide to smooth out surfaces or let them deteriorate. What would optimal road maintenance really look like? Partly, this is a data issue. It's hard to find good data on road quality, particularly in lower middle-income country settings where the benefits of smooth pavements and the speeds they allow could be particularly transformative. But even with good data, we still have to confront thorny identification challenges, challenges of causal inference. So, you know, road maintenance decisions are very expensive, and so policymakers don't randomly assign them. And so naive comparisons of areas that receive road maintenance investments with those that don't will confound the true effects with targeting or selection bias on the part of policymakers. And moreover, in the particular example of road maintenance, you actually have a reverse causality issue where areas that get faster deterioration are also areas that have faster economic growth because they're used more intensively. So it's kind of a thorny data issue and also identification, like causal inference challenges.
I remember when we covered the rural roads program in India, I was thinking in the back of my mind, if I'm still doing this in 10 years' time, we ought to come back and see how well those rural roads are doing. But as you say, it's not as simple as perhaps you might imagine. How do you get past this identification problem?
In Indonesia, our causal inference strategy relies on this sort of two-stage budgeting process for road investments. Mm-hmm. So Indonesia is a unitary government, and the first level of administration is the national government, and provinces are at the second level. And in the first stage, the national government distributes an annual budget for road maintenance investments to subnational, in this case, provincial authorities. And these first-stage allocations are largely driven by strict formulas that depend on observable characteristics of districts in the province, like geography, historical population levels, or historical economic outcomes. And in the second stage, provincial authorities, which are basically provincial offices of the National Ministry of Public Works or provincial public works offices, make these road investment decisions. And the second stage is where the selection bias lies, because you know, local road authorities can decide which places to make these upgrades. But we use the first stage provincial allocations as shifters in road quality at the local level to identify causal effects. So in order for this to work, we need to have a strong relationship between these national transfers and road quality at a local level. And it turns out that in Indonesia, provincial and district governments are really heavily reliant on the central government for revenue for local development and infrastructure spending. Over the period we study, they have no ability to set their own tax rates. They seldom save budgets. They have little sort of reserves to spend on future capital investments. And so we find a fairly strong relationship between our national allocations to provinces interacted with district characteristics and road quality. We also combine our instrument for road quality with panel data on households and firms, and this allows us to control for any time invariant features that might be correlated with both growth and road quality.
But ingenious as it is to get some useful data from this, you have to be able to measure road quality. Is there really data on this for roads in Indonesia?
Right. So starting in the late 1980s, the Indonesian government partnered with Australian Aid to develop this integrated road management system. Mm-hmm. And this was a system that was used to monitor road quality and direct resources to local governments to help, you know, understand when to upgrade roads. And so working with international consultants, the Indonesian government every year launched surveys of its network of national and provincial roads. And these surveys were designed to measure a bunch of things, kind of like road capacity, width, but also road roughness, which is the measure we use. And the standard measure that we use is something that's widely used in civil engineering. Mm-hmm. It's this International Roughness Index, and it basically measures the vertical displacement, this accumulated suspension motion of a rider as he drives over potholes, divided by the length of the distance that you travel when you're going over a rough road. This is an important pavement characteristic because it affects not only ride quality, but also vehicle delay, fuel consumption, mm-hmm. and maintenance costs. So there is data. It's not the easiest to find.
I am always surprised that there is data for these sort of things at all. But once you think about it, it's obvious that this is extremely useful. You are also looking at the impact on household welfare. In your context, what does this mean? What are you measuring?
Yeah, that's a good question. So our study takes a pretty broad view of how road quality might impact welfare. Instead of looking at how road quality might impact a bunch of stuff, we try to be a bit thoughtful and use some basic economics to discipline our investigation. So to begin, we take a really simple model of the household and we derive the household's welfare function, which depends on incomes from different sources and on prices. And so if road quality improves, we can have four important impacts on household welfare. First, there could be wage income effects. So from greater wages and employment opportunities that access to markets provides. There could also be effects on firm profits. So if it might get easier to get your products to markets or reduce input costs, for example, there could also be impacts on goods prices through faster trade. And finally, there could be impacts on housing prices. So if in-migration of firms or workers drives up housing costs, we have a model that puts all that together.
All right, let's pick that apart a little bit then. So first of all, let's start with income. And you say that's a very obvious one to measure. What was the impact on income?
So we use panel data on households in Indonesia from the Indonesia Family Life Survey. And this is a publicly available data set, so you know everyone can get access to this. But we basically find that on average, when road quality improves, nominal income and household consumption expenditures increase significantly. We estimate that a 10% increase in district average road quality leads to about a 2.2% increase in per capita consumption. Mm. When we look at the effects on income of different sources, we find positive effects on labor earnings. And we also find positive estimates of the effects of road quality on firm profits, but these firm profit effects are pretty noisy and they're not statistically significant.
For labor market income, what's happening? Are people working longer hours because, I don't know, it takes them less time to get to work? Or are they doing better jobs because they can travel further for work?
Interestingly, we actually don't find that road quality affects the probability of employment.
Ah.
You know, so one impact might be that you weren't working before and now a firm moved in and you have the ability to get employed. We don't find that. We also don't find any effect on hours worked. But what we instead find is that road quality seems to increase the availability of employment opportunities and it induces some sector switching. Mm. So basically, when road quality improves, people are substituting away from low-wage jobs like informal employment and agriculture, and they're moving into manufacturing jobs or other formal employment opportunities. And this leads to larger wages and increased labor income.
You said you also did some analysis on the effect on firms and firm profits, but not such a big effect here?
The firm data is a bit confusing. So we have firm profits data from the household. So this is like small businesses that the household might run. But we also have information on large manufacturing firms from a completely different survey. Mm-hmm. And so given the importance of this sector switching result, we find it's really useful to verify that's also found in this data set on large manufacturers. And so we find that a 1% increase in road quality at the district level leads to about a 0.6% increase in the number of new firms, a 0.5% increase in total employment. employment at the district level of manufacturers and increases in output per worker as well. One of the really cool things about this firm level data is that there are panel identifiers, and we can see if this effect comes from incumbent firms that were there before the road quality was improved, or if it's actually driven by new firms. And when we look just at incumbent firms, we don't see any robust impacts. And this suggests that these effects are really driven by new firms that are setting up shop in the affected areas instead of improvements in outcomes for existing firms. You know, one thing we're concerned about with these spatial policies is that maybe they just shift around economic activity from one place to another without causing any beneficial gains in overall growth and welfare. And so we actually estimate that this the road improvements at a district don't increase firm closures in nearby districts. And so this is suggestive that firms are not like closing up shop in one place and moving to another, that these are actually true kind of job creation effects.
Tell me a little bit more detail about what's happening to prices here, because of course, if incomes go up, but prices go up as well, then there's no overall benefit.
Absolutely. So we find insignificant impacts on overall wages at the village level. So the sector switching results are really, you know, people are moving away from these low wage jobs into higher wage jobs. Hmm. But we also find that perishable goods prices, which are potentially the most sensitive to rough roads, have lower prices when road quality improves. Mm-hmm. So we see reductions in those prices. And it's very difficult to measure rents and land prices in developing countries. But we find that road improvements are associated with significant increase in housing prices as measured by the cost of rents and also land values.
Now we've got all these different effects that you've managed to tease out, but can we put them all back again and find some aggregate effect on household welfare? Is that possible?
Yeah. So we use this simple welfare framework to combine the impacts of road quality on incomes from different sources, on wage income, farm and non-farm business income, goods prices, and housing prices. And under reasonable assumptions, we find that a 10% increase in road quality translates into about a 1.6% increase in welfare on average. And the positive effects on welfare seem to come from both wage labor income and from business profits. But there are also positive contributions from the consumer goods side. So the fall in the price of perishable goods is helpful for consumers. So one thing I should also say is that, you know, in our welfare analysis, we find that housing costs are going up in response to road quality. And so for renters, this is something that's hurting those individuals. They're experiencing higher housing costs.
Yeah.
But we also find that, like in the data, about 80% of households own their own homes. And so this increase in housing prices could actually be a good thing, because increasing the value of this durable kind of capital asset that kind of raises households' net worth. So we think that our estimate of this 1.6% effect on welfare could potentially be a lower bound because of this.
This seems like pretty good news, but of course, it is expensive to repair the road. So can we then extend this a little bit further and do a cost-benefit analysis for road maintenance?
Yeah, absolutely. So we use this welfare framework to evaluate the costs and benefits of a counterfactual policy that would upgrade all roads at the district level. So the thought experiment is like, suppose you're a policymaker, you inherit a set of roads with a certain set of characteristics, and you'd like to upgrade all those roads to high quality pavement standards. This policy is going to generate some upfront maintenance costs, and we try to obtain a reasonable cost figure for what that might look like. You know, we can debate whether or not that's a good cost figure. Mm. But on the benefits side, the improved road should increase welfare. And over time, though, roads are going to deteriorate, and eventually road quality is going to come back to its previous levels. We do this cost-benefit analysis of a counterfactual road improvement program for every district in Indonesia, and we find that for the median district, the upgrading program confers benefits that are equal to about 2.8 times their costs. And we find that the stimulus effects of improved roads would be enjoyed for about 6 years before road deterioration from use and from weather, etc., erodes road quality back to its previous levels. Now, we also find some substantial heterogeneity. So some districts that are very large, that have an extensive road network, and these districts that are maybe more agricultural or rural, that have relatively little GDP, upgrading those districts is costly relative to the benefits.
Right. Now, we have been talking about this in a positive sense, haven't we? That what happens when people upgrade the roads? But there is, well, I suppose we could call it a two-way street. If you do not upgrade the roads, then they deteriorate, they get worse. Can we use this analysis the other way around? Because I'm thinking at the moment, there are a lot of governments that are looking to cut spending. They spent a lot on COVID-19, for example, and a big ticket item like road maintenance, well, it's always up for cuts. Does that mean that if they cut spending on maintenance, we can use this analysis to say that there will be a reduction in welfare?
You know, I think that's a really good question. So right now, what we're seeing, you know, most developing countries are really engaging in road maintenance and infrastructure spending in a way that's actually pro-cyclical. So that means that when, you know, they have fiscal surpluses, they're both to invest in infrastructure projects. But when they run deficits, as you say, because of lots of spending on COVID-19 and other issues, this type of spending is one of the first things that goes away.
Yeah.
You know, I think our work shows that infrastructure spending can be a useful counter-cyclical fiscal policy tool because it stimulates growth and development. You know, one of the nice things about the variation that we use is we have data over the period in the early 1990s when there's a large increase in inequality. We have deterioration as well, where we see this deterioration is leading to firm closures and reductions in welfare. So our hope is that this study can help policymakers, you know, center themselves and understand that there are important fiscal benefits of this type of a program. And it's something that policymakers can use as a counter-cyclical fiscal policy.
I always enjoy these conversations when there are policies that a lot of us just assume are good policies, but there are huge gaps in our knowledge, and we find out that you've plugged one of those gaps. Thank you very much for talking about it today, Alex.
Thank you so much for your interest in our work.
The paper's called Road Maintenance and Local Economic Development, Evidence from Indonesia's Highways. And the authors are Paul Gertler, Marco Gonzalez Navarro, Tadeha Grasner, and Alexander Rothenberg. This has been a Vox Dev Talk. The best way to make sure you don't miss an episode is to subscribe. Go on, do it after you've listened to this one. You'll find us on any podcast platform. There are also all our back Vox Dev Talks on voxdev.org, where you will also find articles about the papers we feature.